Hey, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Owner's Box. I'm Billy Koch, founder and managing partner at Little Red Feather Racing Club. Joining me one of these ways is Michelle Yu, the great, the talented Michelle Yu, back from Baltimore. We're both back from Baltimore, where we had an amazing time.
We had the best time. It was just like the Owner's Box vacation.
It really was. Just so everybody knows, we went to the Baltimore Orioles game after the races on Friday, after the Black Eyed Susan. Had unbelievable seats. Front row. I saw your
I have a photo of it like that. Hold on, you gotta see.
I saw your TikTok where you did the whole thing.
Yes.
So when you go out with Michelle, I don't know if they could see it. It's blurry.
Blurry because of my stupid thing.
But it's when you go out with Michelle, she's constantly doing these little videos and you're not quite sure what she's doing. And then you see it and then you're like, oh, that's what she was doing. It's great. Special thanks to the Ripken family for hooking us up. Then we had a great Preakness day, even though it was a little kind of rainy and dreary.
We had a beautiful dinner on Saturday night. We had great weekend gambling.
Yes, we did.
It was awesome.
All due to our special guest who is coming up, and that is Shona Rotundo. She does all the social media for My Racehorse. I believe her company is called Grand Slam Social. And she's also, I imagine she probably owns a piece, because it wasn't very expensive to get in. We're going to talk to Shona all about My Racehorse, winning the Preakness, that experience, and her aptitude.
I can't wait. Five. I need to log in. I need to find her video. And that was like one of the reasons why I wanted to have her on, because she was shooting the race. And when the horse won, she like went berserk, but she didn't realize that she was still shooting. So that's the video amazing. Is like her like freaking out and then like running down the stairs and be like, oh my God. Oh my God, like it's awesome. So
I happen to be sitting below her. And I was looking up when I saw the horse was going to win. I kind of turned around and looked up, and it was an amazing sight to see her going absolutely crazy. So we'll hear from Shona, who I now call Shoshana, in a minute. Michelle, what are we going to do on today's show? What are the three things of note? Should we talk a little Dwayne Lucas?
So the first thing of note is obviously that it was the Preakness and Dwayne Lucas won with Seize the Gray, who neither one of us liked iota. But, you know, he went to the front and never looked back. And
that's why they ran the race, right? Mm-hmm. It was really funny. And I think I've told you the story. I flew to the Preakness on the same plane as Tom Ryan, who is owns, you know, he's part of the Avenger crew.
Oh, right? He doesn't just fly private everywhere?
I don't think he does. No, he was on my flight. So, and we were talking about the race a little bit. I'm like, Tom, you have to go. You got to go. Like, and he's like, I don't know. I think this horse might want to target. And I was like, it's going to be off track. Like, just go. And I was like, so when they hit the first turn, I couldn't really see it, to be honest, from where I was. But apparently Frankie had his hands full with imagination and he just decided to take back off that horse. Now, I'm not saying imagination could have won, but I thought the tactics were absolutely wrong. Mm-hmm. I kept saying to Tom, it's not my horse, but
right.
Send him. And that's exactly what the gray is.
I thought the wider part of the track was better because I had walked on it a couple different times. And like when you got down by the rail, it was like really sloggy and hard to get through. Slushy. Yeah. And the outside was a lot more firm, but they did change the track conditions a few times.
And they opened up the track too.
Yeah.
Two races before, which is very strange. So, if anybody knows why they did that, please let us know.
I don't know.
I have no idea. But listen. Seize the Gray got the lead. He ran great on Derby Day and the Pat Day, came back to replicate that effort and go even more forward. And I thought Mystic Dan ran a credible race, finishing second. I thought Catching Freedom ran a credible race, running third. Just didn't kind of work out for them, but let's not take anything away from them. I thought both horses coming out of the Derby, and we talked about this a little bit. There was a lot of Twitter chatter on hey, shouldn't be 2 weeks. To be honest with you, I've been one of those people that would prefer to put the Preakness back a couple of weeks, put the Belmont on 4th of July. So I've had that idea for 100 years. I think it would keep horse racing in the limelight for longer than this just 5 week period. That's number one. Number two would give more chances to recover, come back instead of coming back quickly. I like that plan, but I must say Horses that ran on Derby Day ran 1, 2, 3 in the Preakness. So that argument might as well just fly right out the goddamn window.
You know, I think that when you historically go back, these horses have been able to run back really fine, like really well from the Derby. I think people are just hesitant to do it because then they're like, their excuse if they don't run good is, oh, he was tired. When it's not necessarily the fact that they were tired. You know what I mean?
Do they make like a nasally,
probably
like New York voice?
Maybe. Yeah. Oh,
they were tired. Disappointments, Tuscan Gold, Imagination. Thought both of those that got a lot of hype leading into the race. And you love Tuscan Gold.
I love Tuscan Gold because I didn't like anybody else, right? Like, I was anti-Imagination. I was anti-Muth. And
if you went back, and I'm telling you this, this is all hindsight's 2020. Okay, take that with a grain of salt. But if you went back, like I did, and watched the videos of Tuscan Gold in his last two races, I really don't think you would have liked him. He was being nudged on all in at both races at like the 3-ace pole. And when he broke his maiden, he beat nobody.
Right.
In fact, the horse that was the big favorite hasn't even come back to run. And it was like a 4-horse field or 5-horse field. And then last time in the Arkansas Derby, I mean, Catching Freedom went by him like he was tied to a post.
Yeah.
And I didn't like that horse, but I got caught up in the Michelle likes him. Travis likes him.
I got caught up in the Chad running there. I know.
Next year, I got to be better. Anyway.
The weekend was salvaged with a victory by Belnikov.
I was kind of, we had Swall in the Ski Bat Stakes and she ran a really good second. Looked like she was home. Beer Can Man, I don't think maybe liked that really super soft, slushy turf. But I'll tell you who did like it. And that's Belnikov, who won the $500,000.
Billy was like, Beer Can Man's going to run good. I bet all my money on Beer Can Man. And then he didn't run good. And then Billy's like, don't worry, Belnikov's going to run good. And I was like, yeah, well, that didn't work out last time. And
Belnikov
I'm going to go anti-Belnikov. And then he won.
Well, you know, Frankie Dettori, he's a living legend. I mean, that guy's so good. And it was really funny because before the race, he had told me, we talked a little bit about strategy. And I said, don't change this horse's strategy. Just let him just come out of there. It doesn't matter on this particular turf course how fast or slow the pace is. People were coming from behind, whether they ran 52 for the half or 49 for the half. It just didn't matter. What mattered is if you like the course. And Frankie actually said that to me because it won't matter. If he likes it, he's going to run great. And if he doesn't, he's not. And, by the stands for the first time, he was kind of jumping. It looked really funny. I was like, oh no.
Yeah, I agree. Going on the backside when he's last, and he was like,
and he was like, oh, but then like all of a sudden, Frankie looked like he had a ton of horse. He was like, woo, and he just split horses. It was awesome. And you know, congratulations, Phil D'Amato, obviously not a big name, maybe at Pimlico, but a big name out in Southern California and a big name for Little Red Feather and all the Little Red Feather partners. It's a big group who is part of that horse. The 22 SoCal fund that owns him and Newgrange. So it's a really great group. It's a really lucky group. We had some partners there. My buddy Fred Fruling and Tom Zip. It was really fun. And listen, Belinda and her Stronach group staff put on a great show. They always treat us first class. That chalet is awesome. Preakness Day is my favorite day. I think it's one of my, other than like the Breeders' Cup, I think it's my favorite day of racing in the year.
Well, I gotta say, the hospitality is second to none. I mean, like when the track was muddy, you could go to the coat check and they had booties to cover your nice
like
shoes.
Cool booties. They were cool.
You have to walk across the track and the turf to get to the chalet.
They were super stylish.
We just talk about the food for like 1 minute.
Delicious.
Is that hands down not the best food at any racetrack?
It was great. It was great food. Great. It was all taken care of. Did you happen to see Bobby Flay's text yesterday to Rapoli on the X? We can maybe get into that a little bit.
What did he say?
No, he just said he said that one of the things he, because Rapoli went on, you know, Commissioner Rapoli went on and said
one thing to change
In
the sales and in the races.
And Bobby Flay tweeted, you know, hey, something about the concessions and the how people are treated.
Yeah, okay, I did see that.
Yeah, and I thought it was good point. It was a really good point. So hopefully Bobby's listening and will get or watching. I'm sure Bobby's probably watching.
Bobby's probably not. Nacho might be though.
Yeah, Nacho's probably watching. Anyway, it was a great day. Black Eyed Susan day before, good win. No,
I literally don't even remember that day now. Like, I can't even like remember that day. It was so like,
oh my God, you're amazing.
All I remember is going to the baseball game and we were sitting in the front row behind home plate and Billy is like heckling the bejesus out of these like players. Billy's like, he's like, hey, batter, 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 batter.
I was not doing hey, batter, batter.
Hey, Blue. Hey, Blue.
Yeah, that's true. I was saying, hey, Blue. Should we get
I did not know umpires were called Blues. I thought you were talking to like the opposite team. I'm like, Billy, it's the wrong team.
No, it was, it was Gunsong. Gunsong and Johnny V for Mark Hennig. That was his first Black Eyed Susan.
Right.
Congratulations to Gunsong.
So like a second like kind of addition of a thing of note is that Seize the Gray and Balnikov are now both eligible for a California Crown bonus. So First did announce that they are going to be doing the California Crown, which is going to be similar to Pegasus, but obviously run in California. And they are connecting the three races, the Preakness, the California Crown, and the Pegasus. So Seize the Gray is eligible for a $5 million bonus if he could win the California Crown and the Pegasus in addition to the Preakness. This is very reminiscent of the $5 million bonus you used to get for winning the Triple Crown, right? And then Balnikov is eligible for $2.5 million if he wins the California Crown John Henry Turf and the Pegasus World Cup Turf.
There's only one problem.
He hates Santa Anita.
He hates Santa Anita. He's overrated Santa Anita.
You're like, can we have a horse tag in? No, okay. I have a fun question. If you could have a horse like tag in for him at one race,
Gold who Phoenix, would you pick? Gold Phoenix and the John Henry.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be great.
Oh, that is hilarious.
Yeah. That'd be great. That'd be great.
Okay. But that's kind of cool to be up for a big bonus, even if your horse doesn't like that track.
Absolutely. It's very cool. It's very cool. It's a new thing. Look, they're trying stuff. California. Chat Crown or whatever we're calling it is going to be a great day at Santa Anita. And I'm looking forward to it. I really am. I think, listen, say what you will about the Strana Group and you know, we've bashed them on this show before. I mean, we're very honest and upfront, but what they're trying to do, they're doing some good things. They're coming up with new ideas. I mean, the synthetic track at Santa Anita, we can point to a lot of positives. So maybe after Preakness weekend, give them a break. But this is the best time for horse racing as long as we don't have any controversies. That was me knocking on wood. And I think it's just the last 3 weeks with the Derby and the Preakness has gone really well. And I think it's going to be cool to have the Belmont at Saratoga. I think it's going to be a great, I won't be there, of course, Michelle, because you know, I'm probably never going to Saratoga again.
It won't and, be as hot, maybe.
I really don't care. I will not be there. I will not be at Saratoga on Saturday, June 8th.
Okay, so just so we know, Seize the Gray and Mystic Dan are both being pointed for the Belmont, as is Fierceness and Sierra Leone. So it should be a really great running.
Sierra Leone's going to be a pretty big favorite, I would imagine, based on what he did in the Derby and before the Derby. And just his running style, he looks like he wants to run all day long. And with that big sweeping turn at Belmont, you know, I don't think we'll have any of those kind of lugging in problems that maybe we seen in some of his races. I have a feeling Sierra Leone is going to be very, very tough to beat. And you should probably keep this clip so we can play it back after he wins.
After he wins at like 9 to 5, right?
Hey, all we can do is pick winners, Michelle. That's all we can do. True.
Can't pick prices.
Yeah.
The also did have the Timonium sale this week, Phasic sale. There were a couple of really nice horses that went through the ring. I think there were a couple of good horses that were decent enough buys. And now we kind of
love the horse we bought.
Did you
look her up?
The Caravaggio, right?
Caravaggio filly, yeah.
She's a little fat, I'm not going to lie.
Well, it's interesting you say that. And I'm going to kind of agree with you.
Okay.
But she is a Don Alberto homebred who basically just came off the farm and went sale. So what we liked that about her, that she wasn't this like fully polished,
She came out like she looked like a yearling almost, not size like this, but like, she wasn't like muscular and like robust. Right. She had like a belly on her. And
100%, Michelle, all the things you're saying are the reasons why we really liked her, because we talked to David Scanlon about her, who we have a relationship with, and I do an interview after we buy her with it just for our people so they can hear what David had to say. And I think he, I hope he said it on the video, but he said, Billy, he goes, you know, we didn't know really what we had. And when we started breezing her, she got down like a scorpion. And I was like, that's such a great line. Like, right? She got down like a scorpion. Then? What's that?
Did you name her something with a scorpion?
No, we named her Madonna of Loreto, which is one of Caravaggio's famous paintings.
Yeah.
And she, she'll be up for syndication tomorrow. So if any of you are thinking about getting in on it, I really like this filly.
I'm glad that you said that because normally when I see the horses you buy, I think you and I and John have a very similar, I like a lot of the horses. Like, we're on the same horses, just you're pricier than me, but like from a physical standpoint. And when I saw the walk video of her, I was like, that does not look like a horse that Billy would buy. Like, she looks like a chunky monkey out of a field.
And that, it's so funny. In person, she's not like that.
Yeah.
I mean, she's not fat by any means. I mean, she's relatively fit. I think, though, she's a different kind of horse that came into sale. You know, she didn't go through the yearling sale process.
Right.
She didn't go through this massive prep, you know, going for this. Like, I think those are positives. Though, as we like to say, there's a little bit of meat on the bone. You know, there's a little bit because
literally some meat on the bone.
Yeah, but once she starts breezing.
Oh yeah,
really getting into it, it's going to come off. And I think like Del Mar 5/8 on the grass, like, ba-boom.
Yeah,
you know, that's what I'm hoping for this year.
Is she coming to Phil?
Yep, she's going in Phil, and she's coming. She'll be there tomorrow.
Excellent.
Very exciting. Cool. It's exciting. Listen, we rarely talk about Little Red Feather on this show. That is true. This is an organic show. I don't bring this stuff up, but I believe in my heart of hearts. Huh?
I do.
You do? But I believe in my heart of hearts that this is the best two-year-old class we've ever had.
Yeah.
And I'm not just saying that for the hype. I mean, you saw the Bernardini filly we bought, the Complexity filly we bought, this filly, the Airdrie package that we have for two-year-olds. I mean, it is like... it is really exciting. We have a Mackenzie filly who's awesome. Like, we have a lot of really nice. Now, they have to stay healthy, number one. That's me knocking on wood again. They have to, and they have to go through their progressions, and they have to have good minds. But right now, it seems like they all do, which is like, you're just praying. But I think we have a lot of nice two-year-olds, so I'm excited.
I'm excited for you.
Where's Shona?
I'm just texting her right now.
All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back with Shona.
One second. Just want to mention also that the next sale coming up is the OBS June sale.
We love OBS
and I like the June sale. I think you can get a nice horse from there.
I think you get a really nice diamond in the rough. Like, you could find a horse that's, you know, and a lot of people are going to say, oh, it's the last sale. It's the last time that they can, you know, get rid of these horses or horses that were at other sales. But I've seen horses, some horses just don't progress fast enough to make the March sale, the April sale, even this Timonium sale. Or like, if you had a horse that was maybe between Timonium and OBS June, and maybe it worked better on the synthetic, you go to OBS June because Timonium's dirt. So I think there's going to be a lot of opportunities at OBS June. I think it's I agree with you. It's a really good sale. If you have the patience and you have the time to really go there and dig through the weeds, you could uncover a gem.
I like it. I agree with everything you said wholeheartedly. As we wait for Shona too, just want to give a real quick congratulations out to Joey Peacock. He was named the TOBA Member of the Month. We had him on our show a couple of times.
Joey, he was great.
Doors owner, so.
He was great on the show.
Kudos.
Oh, I have to tell you, I had like three people at the facing sale come up to me and said, I love your show.
Really? I think we're Preakness.
Yeah, and at Preakness. Remember when? Yeah, people came up in Preakness too. What is happening? People are actually listening. Maybe they're watching. Maybe this YouTube thing is working. I have no idea. What are you looking at?
Which email I sent to Shona.
Why don't we pause it and come back with Shona? Okay, back here on the Owner's Box. And our special guest is here, Shona Rotondo, otherwise known as Shoshana, has joined us on the Owner's Box today. And her smile is with good reason. Congratulations on the Preakness. We should I introduced you before you came on, but give just a little background of your kind of work with My Racehorse.
Yeah, for sure. So I have been with My Racehorse in some capacity or another since the day that they launched. And it's a quick, funny story. I spoke at RTIP a while back on a social media panel, and Michael Behrens, who's the CEO, he saw me speak and he reached out to me on LinkedIn. And I, at the time, just, I don't know, I just didn't check my LinkedIn, I guess. It went months before I saw the message. And that's then awesome. I looked at it. Who speaks at a conference and doesn't check their LinkedIn after? I don't know.
I've never checked my LinkedIn. Now I'm like worried. I might have like a job offer in my LinkedIn.
Guys, PSA, go check your LinkedIn's. You have no idea. To change your life. So I went and I saw the message and it was 2 months old. And so I was like, you can always come up with an excuse if it's a week, you know, 2 weeks. Yeah. I was out of town, whatever. I was out of the country. There is no excuse for a 2 month late response to a LinkedIn message. Yeah. So I just kind of owned it. I was like, sorry, brother, I don't check my LinkedIn, but happy to work with you, would be really excited to do so. So then Grand Slam Social, which is now called GSS, the agency, started doing business and we helped launch everything. I mean, they knew nothing about horse racing really, aside from being fans, but in terms of the branding and what horses to use. I remember their homepage had a dressage horse on it. I was like, no, that's not going to work out.
Yeah.
So we just kind of helped consult along the way, launched all their social media platforms. And then over the years, my relationship with the company just strengthened. And I started working, you know, full-time as head of marketing for them in 2021. And then, you know, had a couple kids since then and just have been stayed involved with my resource as much as possible. I'm now just more involved in, you know, high level strategy, partnerships, things like that. But what made the Preakness so meaningful was I've been working on this deal with First and my racehorse for years. I mean, we really started that conversation a long time ago and it finally came to fruition last summer. I remember I was on maternity leave and found out about it and I'm like popping champagne. I'm up at this like lake house and I'm just so removed from the whole thing. And it was just such a cool moment that the brands were able to come together that way. And then to win at a First Track, the Preakness, their marquee race, I think Michelle has a video, but yeah, I just lost my mind. I couldn't.
Well, wait. I want to set, before we show this video, I want to set a couple of tones here because first of all, I've always been a giant fan of Shona, but we've never spent I was thinking about it after, because also we know your husband, Pete, very well. He works with First and he used to work with Breeders' Cup. And I've known Pete for, I don't know.
Oh, so you haven't met the better Rotundo yet. You haven't.
No, but really we had met on occasion and I was always very, very fond every time we spoke or anything, but I'd never spent like a significant amount of time as we spent the other day at Preakness because we just happened to be hanging together. And Shona, like normally I'm like a crazy gambler on these big days. We had three horses running and I was like really focused on the races. I wasn't really focused on the gambling. So Shona was hanging with us and all of a sudden she's putting together pick fives, like crazy pick fives. We hit one, we kind of broke even, we lost another one, but we wanted to do a big one for the Preakness pick five. And so she starts putting the numbers. She would put the ticket together and kind of come to me. I'm like, here, so I think you kind of need to use this horse. One of them was Balnikov. I was like, I think you need to use Balnikov. And she was like, yeah. And she goes, but if we do that, I really need to use Seize the Gray. And I was like, oh, really? Like, why do you need to use Seize the Gray? She goes, if he wins, like, I will never forgive myself. So I'm like, great. Use Seize the Gray. No problem. Well, needless to say, that ticket hit for $11,000. So Shona, from myself, Bill Strauss, Gary, we thank you because we could not have done that without you. But now, watching the race, you were right above on the second level and I was down below. And when I just said this to Michelle, when I knew you were going to win, I turned up and I was watching you and it was, I have the chills right now because it was awesome. It was exactly what the type of reaction that you expect. So now we're going to go to Michelle and we're going to post this video up and I hope I sold it well enough.
Look, beforehand, like when she was saying, we were sitting there putting the tickets together and she was like, I have to use Seize the Gray. She was like, he can win this race. And like, I have to. And I was like, okay. And so when he won, I was inside upstairs. And I like ran over to like the door and all I see is literally a trail of steam and a girl holding Shona's jacket. Okay. It was Shannon. Awesome. I was like, where'd Shona go? She goes, I don't know, dude. Did she win? Because she just threw the jacket at me and she like bolted down the stairs. And I was like, yeah, she won. So like, it was awesome. I'm going to show this video. It's going to take me a second to like.
Okay. All right. This, in the meantime, was anything I say wrong, Shona? That's how it went, right? I mean.
100%. I mean, I think like when we were working with First on the Deal to bring the day together, we thought of everything. Like Megan Warrenmont was our point of contact there. She was amazing. Caitlin Dunn on our team. And we just thought of everything from Monday all the way through to the race. And we had to go through a winner's circle protocol conversation. And so we right. always want to have these conversations with the tracks. Right. We have a lot of owners. Best case scenario, where we work together and we talk about how it's going to go. I don't want to be like jinxy or anything like that, but I'm like, we really need to have this winner's circle conversation. Then when I'm putting my tickets together, I'm sort of like, we could win, you know, and it's raining. I'm like, the horse likes the mud and, you know, who knows, it's horse racing, anything can happen. And I'm like, yeah. I believe in this horse. And there, it was a tough race for him for sure. We all went into it being like, hey, let's just see what happens. Anything could happen. But like a win felt closer than it had before when we'd been in long shot scenarios. Mm-hmm. And so of course I'm putting him in my pick five. I mean,
there you go.
Crazy.
Play the video, Michelle.
Okay. Here's the video. I hope the sound comes out. Oh, it's not going to have any sound.
I hear it.
You hear it? Oh, great. I can't hear it. So if you can hear it, good. So this is, Shauna said she forgot that she had her phone on. this is what happens if you win the Preakness.
Oh, shit. Move. She just tells everyone to move.
This is where she chucks her jacket, right? Like, there it goes.
Oh, my jacket.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. This is legitimately like my fit. Was like
that
my
was awesome. Do you have the one of Shauna though? Like when she's reacting, someone took a video, or yes. did I?
Oh, of the video? No, I have another photo though.
Oh,
I don't have. So I guess Pete, he turned around. He was down like in the turf course, and he turned around and he saw me, and he like tried to get his video up, but I'd already split. I was running the winner's circle. I was like, hell yeah, I just did it. So he didn't have a chance to win on video.
Circle, by the way.
Look at Shauna in the winner's circle.
I mean, that was like a full 15 minutes after we won, but I'm still fist pumping. Like I was.
Yeah, you were.
I like had a heart attack, but Pete's like, it is a moment burned in my brain. I will never forget your reaction in that moment. And I really just, I went all in. Like I have no shame. I went crazy.
I want to know. So you have 2,570 partners on that horse, right? How many showed up and how many were allowed in the winner's circle?
It's hard to fully say how many people were there because a lot of people make their own accommodations. Mm-hmm. I would say that winner's circle, I mean, we for sure had 100 in there. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people could have been on the grandstand side, you know, how the track is split up.
Yeah.
It's hard to get across. So, I mean, it wouldn't be unrealistic to say that there were 500 people at the track that day.
Yeah.
Of his owners, which is mm-hmm. an incredible turnout. I mean, we've gotten so many messages from everybody who's involved, whether you're there or not. I mean, remote people watching from home. I think a lot of tears were shed that day for a lot of people. And those are the kind of moments that like solidify your involvement in the industry. I mean, you mm-hmm. have those memorable moments. It doesn't even have to be, and rarely is, a Preakness win or a Kentucky Derby win. It's sometimes just your first victory or your first graded stakes. And just to have that emotion, you're going to be chasing that forever. It is a drug, man. I mean, Billy, you know, like there's
no. Listen, I'm a complete psychopath during races. I scream at the top of my lungs. My voice is finally coming back. And you just, I've tried to explain it to people. You lose everything. You have no conscious of what you're saying, how you're reacting, how loud you're screaming, what you're doing. It is wild. There's nothing like it. You cannot buy that kind of adrenaline. And that's what's so great about our sport. You experienced it with Authentic in his run in the Kentucky Derby and the Breeders' Cup.
Feel different than Authentic because Seize the Gray was a My Racehorse purchase. While Authentic, you guys bought into.
Well, not only that, I think it was during the pandemic. Yeah. So there was not the energy and the emotions. Right. You tell us, Shauna.
Oh, 100%. It felt better than the Derby win for both of those reasons. A, we were there physically. Mm-hmm. There was also, for me, this layer of all the work that had gone into the first deal and the fact that we were able to celebrate it with them in their biggest moment. But then also the fact that my racehorse bought the horse at the Phasic sale.
Yeah.
We picked out the horse.
Who picked out the horse?
We sold out the horse. Like everybody who was involved, So our bloodstock team, it was Roderick Watchman, Joe Moran, Nick Hines. They've been, you know, working for years with us, and it's, I mean, I'm so happy for them. I'm so proud of what they've accomplished. And that's, you know, even if they had found the horse and we'd found a partner later and they bought in, which we do all the time. The fact that it's 100% my racehorse owned, it's amazing for multiple reasons. A, they get all the credit, which they completely deserve. B, these owners are getting money. Like, they've already made their money back in payouts to their My Racehorse wallet. So everyone who put in that $127 to buy a share has already gotten
$127.
Plus some, right? Yeah. And so this is going to be our first opportunity to tell that story where, look, it's really hard to make money in horse racing. Everybody knows it. It doesn't matter if you spend $127 or $1.2 million. Like, you really just have to stick it out. You have to believe. You have to stay involved and keep trying. And then those big moments where it could pay out and does pay out, it just, that's amazing. Like, congratulations to everybody involved.
Right. It's not about the money. It's about the experience, but the money helps. And, you know, Shauna, I was just thinking while you were talking that one of the things you hear about my racehorse is that, you know, someone will say, oh, I own that horse. I was like, great. Yeah. You own nothing. You own a little tiny piece of the horse, BFD. Yeah. But as a marketing person and what you do, how do you respond when people say that, when people like kind of downplay the fact that 2,500 people own the horse?
I think it's, I love letting our owners answer that question because they really are very good at fighting for themselves and advocating for themselves. We do our very best to advocate and try to create like authentic owner experiences. So we're in the background going to these tracks every time we're in a big race. We're negotiating for more paddock passes. We're trying to get, you know, upgraded seating. We're doing everything we can to create a really great experience for owners. But when it comes to the pride of ownership and when someone says, you know, I own Seize the Gray, oh, well, you're one of 2,500. I don't think the dollar amount at all impacts your emotional connection to a victory like that. It does not matter. Like, even winning the pick five, that was this, I thought about it later. Like, I wasn't even, it wasn't a factor in my reaction because I was like, oh my God, this horse won. And I think it's also a lot about the journey because the way the app works, you buy in and you go through a lot of ups and downs unless you have like a horse out of the gate who breaks its maiden and just has this meteoric rise. I mean, we all know that doesn't happen. Like, look at Fierceness. Look at, you know, look at what Rapoli went through last year, you know, right before the Derby. Like, there are going to be heartaches in this sport. So when you start the journey with a horse that was purchased as a yearling, you fall in love with this baby, you watch him as he gets, you know, trained and go through that process. You see him in his first race, not do so great, but you believe in him. And then he breaks his maiden and you're like, oh my God, I have the best horse in the world. And then he comes back and he fumbles a couple more races. Like, there's nothing better than like going through all of that. I think it makes the win even sweeter. And it really doesn't matter how much you own. You're connected to that horse emotionally. It's why people freak out when they follow Flightline or when they were following Zenyatta.
Yeah, no, for sure. One other question, since because you've been with my racehorse from the beginning, how have you seen it change and grow in these past few years? What are the kind of differences from when you started? And along those lines, has anything like you thought you were going this way and then, oh, maybe we should go this way?
Oh, God, loaded question.
Sorry, I just came up with that. Honestly, we don't even prep.
Well, it's a great question. I think so much has changed with my racehorse. I mean, we started off, I think the biggest kind of factor is figuring out how to do it on our own. Like, I think when we started out, there was a lot of partnership with Huey Hughes and Spendthrift, and we're so grateful for everything that they've done for the brand. And Mr. Hughes was just such a great person and such a positive force for the company. And it's really how it got started. And then like after his passing, it was like, we got thrown in the deep end. It was like, hey, now you got to figure out how to, you know, fund the company, operate more efficiently, you know, find the right horses, do right by the community. And so I think Michael Behrens has done a good job in navigating that well. And really, a horse like Seize the Gray is a reflection of the team that we've had in place and everything that we sort of really worked for. And again, a lot of heartache leading up to, you know, this moment for us. This is great. We shot it from the rooftops, but we've had to navigate a lot of like tricky comms with owners. Mm-hmm. The way that we operate by law has to be like full transparency. And I think it's something that the industry isn't used to, because it's easier not to be transparent sometimes, especially in such an old industry where, you know, there's a lot of wheeling and dealing and things like that. So we've had to just be kind of the first to be transparent about how the business works.
Yep.
You know, and so then navigating that, I think, has been a success. And I think maybe the other biggest thing was, as the brand grew, just how to handle ownership at scale. Like, we've had to adapt the platform technology to handle things like, we now have automated lottery systems. So when you, whatever we get, whatever assets we get from the track when we're in a race, we lottery that all off to the owner. So there's circumstances when I have to like make a call to get Behrens into the paddock because he doesn't have a paddock pass, because we lotteried off the paddock pass because he doesn't, right. He's the steward of the series, but he's not the owner, right?
Right.
So we've had to automate that process where you go in and you can submit your name and it automatically selects the winners at a certain date. And then just goes down the line. If you don't accept, it goes to the next person. So some of that technology has definitely developed over the years, and just generally managing that many owners, you know, they're always writing in and they want to know information. How do we keep the horse safe? How do we keep the barn safe, the trainer safe? We don't want these owners dropping by unannounced, trying to go visit their horse.
Sure.
So just really trying to put a lot of structure in place to manage such large groups of owners and do our very best to create a really awesome experience for them.
Where do you find the majority of your owners are located? Are they close to a major track? Are they people like middle of the country? You know, it'd be a trip to get to California, and that's why I'm you know, part of this.
Yeah, unsurprisingly, there are large chunks of our owners who are located in the central markets for horse racing. So you have Florida, California, New York, mm-hmm. Texas is big as well.
Kentucky.
And then of course, Kentucky is, you know, a large market. We started off in California in 2017 mm-hmm. before the company was able to sell nationally. And so we have a really strong California base.
If there was one thing that you could go back in time to start knowing what you know now, is there something that you would have like, if I would have just said that at one of the early meetings, it would have been so much easier.
Not really, because I think that there's been a lot of reacting to the circumstances. And I think in horse racing, and in business,
you were diving into the unknown. I mean, with a lot of this stuff, I mean, we did a crowdfunding thing before my racehorse. We did two of them, actually tried to do it. And I have to tell you, it was difficult. And we only had like 100 people, not 2,500. It was just from that vantage point, from where I was coming from, I was like, we can't do this just with, you know, two people. You need an army. I think that's what I learned, you know, right away.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think, if we could go back in time and talk to our earlier selves, I think we probably would have mapped out the tech stack a little differently and just been, right. You know, knowing what the issues were going to be down the line, we could have designed the tech to help us more efficiently address those issues. But I mean, honestly, the team has been pretty good at reacting to what the needs are. And I think the hardest thing sometimes is that as things progress and unfold, what you think you need then isn't even necessarily what you need in 6 months from that period of time. Sure. So it's hard. I mean, it's very volatile and it's very fast paced. And it's odd because I remember I was interviewing for a marketing manager, you know, a few years ago, and I was, you know, talking to all these people and getting to know their jobs. And this one guy worked for a shoe brand and he was like, yeah, so I get my product, you know, selection, I get it 6 months out and I like build my campaign and I do all the, I schedule all the professional shoots and I do my video commercials and I plan my paid media and blah, 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 blah. I was like, how 6 days? Like, yeah, right? I get my product.
It's a sale. He's on his van ride. We need to sell him. Like,
yeah, totally. 6 days. I mean, the clock starts ticking the minute that horse, that the hammer drops, and we got to get all the materials ready because a lot of the marketing materials have to be created before the submission is sent to the SEC. So I the pressure to come up with a marketing campaign is crazy because it has to be done so fast. And you know, it's just wild and fast paced.
Very, very cool. The whole thing is
also
cool.
Also, I think Shona, weren't you pretty much instrumental in some of these horses coming to like the East Coast and being with people like Wayne? I know, I remember like vaguely you like when they wanted to come East, and you were, you know, talk about like the trainers that you guys could get. And it was like, you know, Wayne Lucas has to be one of the trainers that we use.
I learned early on. I'm happy to throw in and give the bloodstock team and, you know, my opinion and the racing team my opinion, but they do a great job. So I've learned to kind of stay out of it. The only place that I would be pretty adamant is when it was coming to, when they were going to the sales, and I would say, you know, looking at what the market needs are right now in the community, I would say like, I really need a, you know, horse by Justify. I need a gray. Sometimes I'll just be like, I need a gray. Get me a gray. Because some people will just buy because the horse is beautiful. And that's fine. Yeah. I'm happy if you click because the horse is beautiful. And then you realize you love horse racing. Yeah. You know, yeah. I'm not picky. So I think, that's when the bloodstock team and the marketing team would really come together. But otherwise I let them do their thing. They're very good.
It's amazing. It was an amazing accomplishment. I mean, the Derby, now the Preakness, and I mean, you're probably not going to go to the Belmont though, are you?
So Mr. Lucas said, we're going to the Belmont. Came out today. Yeah. Well, that information, became official, and then it's just been like, now it's like working on local media in Saratoga, trying to figure out what the storyline is there. Like really just right now we have the mic. It's not, it never lasts for anyone for too long, but it's our moment. So we're going to do the best we can. And I think one of the most important differences between now and the Authentic situation, to your point, Michelle, like we bought into Authentic. So the deal was riddled with kickers and a lot of complexity and for good reason, right? Each party had to protect themselves. We didn't, I mean, can you imagine like seeing a Kentucky Derby winning kicker in your deal and being like, okay, whatever. Like you never think you're going to win the Derby or the Breeders' Cup Classic. It happened. Those kickers were triggered and it was really hard to get out of that kind of hole in terms of having a significant profit for the owner. So in this case, what's great is that our owners are already profitable with Seize the Gray. And we're finally able to tell that story of, hey, you could make money as a fractional owner in the right circumstances.
I mean, even regardless though, it's like, if you just told me, Michelle, I can guarantee you're going to have a triple crown winner that you can be an owner of for $127. I'd be like, I'm in. Like, here's my money. Take it.
Well, it's impossible to guarantee that, but what we can guarantee.
No, but looking back, you know, look, if you have 20/20 hindsight and you're like, hey, $127 and you have a good chance to run a triple crown race and maybe win it, like you'd be like, yeah,
I'll do it.
Yeah. But even so, what we do guarantee on a daily basis is you never have to spend a cent above what you pay for one share or whatever, however many shares you bought. If you were to tell me, I've owned horses my whole life, I'm still paying for a retired Hunter Jumper that I got. He's 28. Like, I love him. Of course I'm going to pay for him. He's my child. Like, but there is just, I mean, to not have to spend a single cent above what you're willing to risk on a share of a horse, that's just not possible in any other circumstance. And like, we can't guarantee the upside because no one knows what's going to happen. And it's hard to make money in horse racing. And they have bills. When you buy a share, we collect 2 years of prepaid training, everything that we put a bunch of money into a reserve account. And then that all is used to fund the horse's campaign, right? And then as the horse wins, we top off the reserve. No one's getting that money. We're not getting that. My racehorse isn't taking that money. We're just putting aside so we can pay the bills on the horse, vet bills, trainer bills, shipping, entry fees, all that stuff. And then at the end, anything that's unused just gets returned back to the owners. So there's a whole kind of escrow account where that's all being funded from. And so at the end of the day, if you do, if you're lucky enough to have a horse that is as successful as someone like Seize the Gray, who's now looking at the next phase of his life being, you know, having a stallion career, which could lead to a huge payout for owners. That's all the upside. It's hard to get. It's not going to happen all the time. It's not going to happen very much, but it can happen. So we can't guarantee the upside, but we can guarantee that the downside is no less than you risking $127 to buy into Seize the Gray and have a good time, follow his whole process and be entertained and come out to a few races and chat with your friends in his Facebook group. And, you know, what's the harm in that?
So nothing. I have been a My Racehorse partner on two horses. They were $90 each one. They've both been, they were both stakes winners. What one, you said he's 127. What determines the price point? Is it just the original purchase price, or does it have something to do because you use some of those funds, like for the trainer pay, like does the day rate go into that factoring? Well,
there's margin in there. They have to make money.
Yeah. The best part of buying with My Racehorse is you can literally look all of this up on the buy page. It's by law has to be listed out there. So we go in, it's public knowledge. You have all of the, if you go to a buy page and you scroll to the bottom, there's like a little kind of wheel and it shows you the breakout. So it's the asset cost, the bloodstock fee. There's like a due diligence fee. There's actually quite a bit that goes into the cost of like submitting, you know, submitting to the SEC, making sure we have all the right legal parameters in place. And then you have, I mean, the biggest one is the prepaid training and the insurance on the horse. That's really what is the most significant impact. Cause a lot of the other stuff is just a one-time payment. And we try to minimize those costs by grouping together submissions. So if we have like a group of horses we're submitting at the same time, we'll pay that as a one-time cost and spread that across multiple horses. But the prepaid training, it gets you. I mean, it's expensive to campaign them. It does guarantee that you don't have to pay out of pocket ever, but at the same time, that can be kind of a lot to see on that page.
Sure.
But yeah, it's all transparent. And then the margin, there's a, there's an experiential fee and a management fee. The experiential fee is just, a lot of it has to do with like the platform and the technology that we use to, go and get the content, post the content, you know, manage things like, 1099s at the end of the year. Do you know how many 1099s you have to send out?
Oh my gosh.
Holy moly. There's a lot. So yeah, I mean, it's all really fair, pretty much on par with a lot of other, syndicates. I don't, I'm not sure how transparent they are with Little Red Feather, if it's like listed on the website, but there's materials you guys are sending around to, you know, your partners that you're happy to share and comfortable with them sharing with their friends and family who are considering getting involved. So,
Actually, since we were talking about this, I'll show what we're talking about for.
Oh yeah. Perfect. You can show.
Wow. This is like a, My Racehorse commercial. I expect to see this, Shona, on your.
Oh, website. Here's like this New York bread bundle. Oh, I haven't shared it yet. Hold on, I gotta add it. Okay, here we go.
Well, I mean, how about the fact that we have a horse that's gray that's trained by Lucas?
For only $81 too. So here's the little trainer thing, and then here's what she was talking about with the breakdown of costs, and then how much
it costs. And those drop down.
So. Wait, go back to the breakdown of costs just so we can see it. You scrolled by it so fast. So you have the brokerage fee, management and due diligence fee. Organizational experiential fee. Is that how I say that?
Experiential fee. Yep. Organizational experiential. Yep.
Yeah. Operating. You could see the acquisitions almost, I mean, it'd be interesting to see the percentages on here, but the acquisition is almost half. It's 90 of 225 and the acquisition and the operating is 80 of 225. So between those two.
So here you go, Billy. In the acquisition cost, it does say the New York bread bundle is 51% purchased at this rate plus this and this and how many shares it is. So it
if you click into the operating reserve, you clicked out, but that's prepaid training, insurance, and there was one other thing. So and that reserve over time is managed by the series. So it will get topped off. So if you go and you win a race, your payout is off of we pull a bit out, put it into the operating reserve so we can continue funding the horse's career. And then the rest is just distributed to the owners.
Look, I think the fact the way this is laid out and everything, you guys do a fantastic job. I get all your marketing material. I really like it. I think, you know, I think My Racehorse gets a lot of shit And it has over the years. But I think what you guys are doing for the industry is a positive. And I think that in, you know, listen, some of your owners, a lot of your owners come up the funnel to us and to other syndicates. And when they want to get more involved and they want a smaller group. So I think you're bringing in people. When I first started Little Red Feather, and when I first got into the game back in 1991, someone asked me for kind of a mission statement. It was to bring new people, new owners into this game. And what you guys have done, and with all your success in the Kentucky Derby and now the Preakness, I mean, kudos to all of you guys. I know Michael and Joe and Sarge and all those guys, and they do work hard. They do a great job. And I guess continued success, but congratulations, Shona. You should be very proud.
Thanks, Billy. You guys a great job as well. I mean, you guys have had tons of success and been at the game for a long time. And I think, you know, with my racehorse, and probably you go through this with your groups. We can't change horse racing, right? We can't change the statistics around winning and losing. Like, it is just hard to do. Yep. It's what makes it so exciting to gamble on. It's what makes it so exciting to be a part of. Nobody knows what's going to happen. You could have the fastest horse in the world. You don't know if the horse is going to win the race. You just never know. Anything can happen. And that's an amazing feeling. And when it does come, when you do win, and that does happen, especially if you're a long shot, I mean, it's just such a high that you cannot imagine. Yeah, but at the end of the day, these are the great moments. I'm so proud of Seize the Gray. I'm so proud of Coach, everybody who's been involved, the Bloodstock team for selecting him. I'm so happy the brand's having this moment. A lot of people are going to come in and think that they can do this, that they can also win a Preakness. And so we'll get a lot of people who join, and then we'll have to navigate the comms of saying, okay, this is possible, but by
not likely
6, 7, 8 horses, 7 of the 8 might not even make it to the races or be successful. So there's a lot of work ahead of us to bring those people in, get them connected enough to horse racing and the horses to want to kind of stick it through and endure what the lows may be. And hopefully they stick with us long enough and they end up with a Seize the Gray themselves and they're just on cloud 9.
I think they will. We appreciate you coming on, Shona. Thank you so much for spending the time with us today. Good luck in the Belmont. Unfortunately, I don't know if you know this, but I will never go to Saratoga again.
Shona lives in Saratoga.
Wait, what? You won't come to the town or you just won't go to the racetrack?
Both.
I won't go near Saratoga.
Billy won't go to
Are you allowed to share the story with me? What happened?
It was just, I just had a horrible Whitney experience 2 years ago.
Oh, no.
It was like the weather, the clothes, the food, the accommodations.
It was 1,000 degrees with 2,000 degree humidity, and I had 6 horses, and all of them ran last, and it rained then. All of a sudden, it was really hot and humid, and I couldn't breathe, and then it just started raining, like, in the middle. Like,
I couldn't breathe, and my horses didn't run well.
I was like, what is going on? I've never come here again.
And I had to wear clothes. Don't shoot.
I had to wear, like, nice clothes, too.
Yeah, terrible. You were probably, like, in a clubhouse or something, and you had to wear, like, a jacket, and you were like, are you kidding me? I'm Billy. What is this?
Well, it also,
okay, well, I will say to that I know this saying, it's called time heals all wounds. So maybe in time we can convince you to come back and hang out with us. When it's great here, it's great here. When the weather can definitely throw you for a loop, especially if you're not kind of prepared. But I'm going to say that one day you'll be back. I'm going to hope for that.
I will go. If you're there gambling, I will go anytime. So,
well, that was my follow-up. Are we pick fiving on Belmont Day? Like, what does this mean?
I will not be there, but we could certainly do, obviously, a lot of Venmoing. We should probably do some pick fiving on Belmont
Day. Does the magic work? Wait, Michelle, you were in one of the pick fives. You didn't make it into this pick five. What happened? Yeah. Are you pissed? I'm so sorry. Where were you?
I didn't know you guys were like finishing those all up, and I wasn't given an amount to be able to buy in. I was only there for the first one we put together.
To credit you, you were working.
Yes,
so,
I was working.
I mean, Shona was working too, but Michelle was really like going around talking to people. So when we put the ticket together, it wasn't like we were just standing there.
And
so.
I was part of just the one because I jumped in because I wanted for sure to use like 2 horse, like Super Chow and something else. So we were just like early. There. So I was like, okay, I'm in on that because like I want to use those horses.
Yeah. Well, so Gary and I did one. It was like the one that started with race 3. And we were like 4 for 5 in that one and just didn't make it. And then we did another pick 5 that started with race 5, won that one. Then you were on the pick 5 that started with race 7.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then we all went just to, so it was like, it was a very fluid day. So, But I don't know, is the magic going to work if you're across the country? I don't know.
We'll yeah, we're going to do like,
yeah, we'll do it. We'll get the team back together. Don't worry. We have Venmo. It's so great with Venmo.
We have Venmo.
Jonah, get out of here. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Jonah.
All right. We'll see you later.
Such a girl crush on Shona.
All right. Shona Rotundo. What a great guest. She was awesome. Great idea.
She's very like low key about herself, but she busts her ass for this. Yeah. And that was like one of my most favorite memories of all Preakness was getting to watch Shona's excitement after winning.
Yeah, it was great. No, she's a good person. And her and Pete, obviously, two of our favorites. So yeah. Congratulations to all the My Racehorse fans out there with Seize the Gray, who is on to the Belmont. Michelle, what do we have
coming up? You too, Billy. I ran across the track in the rain with my purse in my shoes just to go like hug you and
yes,
say,
thank
like,
you.
Yay.
You did. Good
so
job.
So it wasn't just Shona I was excited for. No, just so you
thank know. You. Michelle, what do we have at Santa Anita this week? We have a big weekend, Memorial Day weekend. Hello.
Yeah. So, okay. So it's Memorial Day weekend, like you said, and here, I'm just going to share this so we can kind of like show the, so much that's going on at the Great Race Place. Let me get this going. Let me add this to the stage. Look at how good I'm getting at this. Okay. So on Friday, we've got live racing. We've got this California Chrome Pin. And then we've got the Folds of Honor poker tournament this weekend. Are you playing in that?
When is it?
I think it's Saturday, maybe. Let's see. Click.
I would play on that. I didn't even, to be honest, I didn't even know about it.
No? Oh, yeah. Okay. So look, so Saturday we've got it's like the Calbred races, right? All of these.
Yeah. I got one.
And then we've got the California Beer Festival trackside. Yeah. We've got the weekend carnival in the infield. We've got the Smorgasbord curated barbecue invitational. That should be trackside as well. And then we are going to have the Folds of Honor going on. It might be Sunday or Monday. There's a $500 betting challenge starting on Saturday.
Okay.
Sunday, we've got more of the same, but less stakes races. And it is the Summer Corgi Nationals. People love that, right?
Yeah. Yep.
We prefer the Bulldogs ourselves, but that's okay. And then Monday we have racing. Obviously, it's going to be Dollar Day, which is always huge.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And we have a $1,500 handicapping tournament. And Monday is the actual Folds of Honor poker tournament. Okay. So it begins around the last race, ends at 10 p.m. It's a $300 buy-in, which includes your day at the races, drink tickets, food, silent auction. You can also just do like a little donation package if you don't want to play, but you want to donate.
Amazing. Cool, I think we're considering conclude for the Shoemaker Mile.
Are you? I'm so happy to hear he's back.
He's doing great. And but this race is coming up. I mean, you got Johannes, who looked awesome. You have Exalted, who won the race last year. You have Dujour as a grade one winner. You have Easter from Field Motto. You got Air Force Red. Wesley Ward is apparently sending in two horses, Dominican Pioneer, and Fantastic Again. It's going to be a really good race to Shoemaker Mile. Great one.
Again, wasn't he Maryland and didn't get in? Okay.
Yes. So big Shoemaker Mile on Monday at the Great Race Place. Michelle, you are a gem. Shona Rotundo, you are a gem. That was a great show, and I can't wait to do this again next week.
Samesies.
Okay. Peace.